welcome to the Q&A if you're joining us live, if you're listening to this recorded because you couldn't make it. We got so many of your questions, and we'll be answering them today. And, of course, I'm here with Dr. Sarah. And before we get started, I did want to just say the disclaimer that we say with all of the Q&As, that this is not to be treated as medical advice. You always need to go to your medical practitioner. Dr. Sarah absolutely has no idea what your physical background, your medical history is, and this is not to be used as any sort of medical prescription. And if you have any issues whatsoever, please see your practitioner. But with that, we will get started with the Q&A. Dr. Sarah, I know people have been waiting for a couple weeks through the Christmas holidays. Some of these questions came literally a month and a half ago, so I know people will be psyched to get them answered. Pardon me again. So we can just dive right in. And we're going to do the first question that's been submitted, and then if you're joining us live, we will tell you the instructions on how to ask a question live. So first, and I'm so glad someone asked this because I wanted to know too, does exercise count towards TR time? As a working mom of two, I find it extremely difficult enough to sneak in my regular visits to the gym, which end up being either very early in the morning or late at night as a result.
I so love this question, and my answer is mostly yes. That's the short version. So here's how I think about this. For this working mom of two, I totally get it. I'm a working mom of two. I know what it's like to try to make it to the gym, to make the time for exercise. So it sounds certainly for you that it's TR time. The idea with TR time is that you are getting the right dose of self-care. Unfortunately, we're wired as women. I think men have a much less hard time with this. We're wired to take care of everybody else first, to accommodate everybody else first, and then, oh, if there's time, maybe you can make it to the gym. So it's so important, I believe, to really make sure that you've got a great boundary on me time. And that's what I mean by TR time. Really, it's your time to be a queen. It's your time to really step into the self-care, because that helps you with that bad boy hormone cortisol, right? So for this woman, I would say it definitely sounds to me like that's your TR time. The caveat is that, you know, I'm also a hard-driving working mother of two, and I imagine some of you who are listening today can relate to that kind of hardcore approach to exercise. I mean, I used to sort of do these constant calculations before I got wise about working smarter, not harder. And I would spend hours at the gym over-exercising. So over-exercising definitely does not count as TR time. It's kind of like cortisol, where we want it to be in that Goldilocks position. We want that for all of your hormonal Charlie's Angels. So when it comes to TR time, the idea is that you've got the right dose. You don't have too much. You don't have too little.
Mm-hmm. And so I was gonna follow up with that, because I do see people who are working out way too hard for their physical baseline, and their cortisol is shooting straight up to the moon when you see some people with personal trainers. So I wanted to know if that would have the opposite effect.
Yes, definitely. So we know that you can definitely overtrain. You can overexercise. Getting injuries is an example, a sign that your exercise is not TR time. You know, there's certainly exceptions. You fall and you have an injury. But for people who overtrain, you know, say you're a marathon runner. I think we talked about this before. If you look at the aging process and the hormones of a marathon runner versus a Tibetan monk, The marathon runner ages at a much more accelerated rate. So I'm not saying, you know, you must stop marathon running if you love it, but I don't think running 100 miles is such a good idea. Now, I'm not saying you got to be a Tibetan monk, but there's a place in the middle where that's where I think TR time is.
And for those also listening, we have had some physical trainers as well as people who have actually been doing the ultra marathons, you know, 100 miles in 100 miles a day for 10 days straight. And he talks a lot about how people overtrain. And they're sitting in that position where they're not at their, they're overtraining for their physical baseline. And the reason I'm saying this is because there's a really easy way to tell with your heart rate that you're not overtraining. And so what you do is you take your age and you subtract it from 180. So I'm just going to give myself as an example. So 180 minus 42, and that obviously means it's 138. Now, because I'm a pretty regular exerciser, I'm not completely the most fit, but I also haven't been injured in the last year. I keep that 137 as my highest number, and then I go down, I subtract 10 from there. So if you're following me, because I know it's a little strange, that perfect position of me working out is between 137 and 127 in terms of my heart rate. That's been proven by so many people who train to really be able to, that's their sweet spot position. They have almost no injuries, and this is what a lot of these people who do a lot of these really crazy races, like winning the Hawaii Ironman. Dave Allen is he's won it, I think, 6 times, and this is the formula he used. It's the exact formula I'm giving here, and what it did is it showed him what his physical baseline was. Before he discovered this, he used to run 5-minute miles, 4-minute miles, not 4-minute, five and six, and he used to get injured constantly. And until he used this formula, and when he used this formula, he had to go back up to an 8 or 9-minute mile. Can you imagine someone who's competing professionally has to go back to an 8 or 9-minute mile? But once he used this formula and he started training within that heart rate, he would get faster and faster, but he was staying in that heart rate. And that's what he credits, obviously a lot of nutritional things and stress relievers and other things, but that heart rate training in that specific, as Dr. Sarah likes to say, that Goldilocks position, he was able to become the number one winner 6 times of the Hawaii Ironman. And I don't know if you know, everyone listening, but it's the biggest race there is for the Ironman athletes. So again, that formula is just you take 180, you subtract your age, and again, I would be 42, so then I go down to 138, and then my awesome training is 128 to 138. I might have said 7 before. But if you've been injured, you have to subtract even another 5. So let's say I've been injured in the last year, you would take 138 and you would go down to 133. And then my ultimate training would be between 123 and 133. Now, if you view yourself as really physically fit, then you would add 5. So I'm 138 again, so I would add 5, and that would be 143 to 133. But I think you get it, and I will also put a little bit more of that formula just so that you can understand what I'm saying. But you know, most people train way over that particular 10-point range. Almost everyone, especially when you haven't worked out in a while, and it feels so good and you're getting that adrenaline rush from running or from the elliptical and you haven't done it a while. So I just wanted to insert that, because when we really showed people what this formula was and people started doing it, they really were able to go and work out with confidence, and they didn't get injured as much. And they also, the added benefit is when you work out in this range, you're not starving afterwards. You don't want the cheeseburger and the large Coke, because you're not in what they call the sugar bait burning phase. You're in a fat burning phase. So just to also add to that, Dr. Sarah, I went on and on, but I think it's so important that people actually have numbers to say, well, what do you mean? How do I find out what my, if I'm working out, if, you know, this is an optimal thing for me?
Well, I love it when you add in that kind of detail, Jackie. It just makes me do the happy dance, because I would further add, to respond to this question, does exercise count toward TR time? I would add that when you get granular, like Jackie just did, she just went through her training range for her age, how to adjust it if you have an injury. When you get granular like that and you are exercising in that zone, you know, when Jackie's exercising and her heart rate is about 150, right? Like you said, 138.
Yeah, I get mine is, my optimal is 128 to 138, which is considerably lower than when I was younger and I would go to the gym and I would just, you know, burn it out as hard as I could.
Right. So when you have, when you're exercising, Jackie, at 130 and you've done this exercise and you've gotten really granular, I would say that is where you've got your TR time happening.
Yes.
So in some ways, you're sort of killing two birds with one stone. I don't love that analogy, but you are getting your TR time when you're in that zone. Now, if you just go to the gym and you're flinging yourself around and you're, you know, going an hour and a half all out and burning out your adrenals, raising your cortisol because you're exercising too hard and your heart rate's above that target range, that's not TR time. So I'm glad that we were able to get specific. I think the next question is about adrenal repair, which is my favorite conversation of all. Should we move to that one?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so I'll read this one. Love it. What is the adrenal repair conversation that Dr. Sarah recommends every night when you sleep? She refers to it but doesn't describe what it is. Will you please describe the adrenal repair conversation? So I'm so delighted that this question came up. And the answer is probably a few hours, but let me try to hit the headlines, hit the highlights for you. The idea with the adrenal repair conversation is that it's conceptual. It's mostly conceptual. There's some physiology to it, but I want you to hear this information on a metaphorical level. You know, what does this mean as a metaphor for your life? And also on a more literal level. The adrenal repair conversation I first heard about, I want to make sure that I give proper credit to the lineage, like how I learned about this. I first heard about it in a conversation with folks associated with the Weston Price Foundation. I think there's a lot of wisdom in the Weston Price Foundation. I'm not going to talk a lot about them, but I really think that many of their approaches to eating, to nourishment, are part of this adrenal repair conversation. The idea with the adrenal repair conversation is that every night you flip a switch. I know you know this, but let me get specific. You flip a switch. You go from being conscious, being in the world, connecting with your family, rocking your mission, making some money. You close your eyes. You fall asleep. You go through these different sleep phases. And it's where all of the growth and repair happens. You know, another way to look at this is that if you take all of your hormones, all the ones that we've been talking about in this course, you can actually divide them into two camps. One camp is the catabolic hormones. Now, I know when I say a word like that, Jackie, you start to...
I did.
You start to space out. You start to think, what do I need from the grocery store again? So, yeah, catabolic hormones, here's what I mean by that. They break things down. So cortisol breaks things down. It breaks down glucose, so you can use it as fuel. On the other end of the spectrum is the anabolic hormones. Bear with me, Jackie. So anabolic hormones are the growth and repair hormones. They're hormones like testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
They love you up. They help you build muscle. They help you support your immune system. So when you go to bed at night, you switch from the breakdown to the build and repair hormones. And that's where you're healing all those cute little cells in your body. You're kind of taking all the DNA, all the little places in your body where some damage has been done during the day. I know you know what I mean by that. And it's kind of getting swept up, vacuumed up, and sent away. so that it doesn't cause harm, it doesn't create that bad neighborhood that we've been talking about. So the adrenal repair conversation, the idea is that with this beginning, middle, and end, what I find for a lot of people is that they're really good at the beginning conversation. You know, it's almost like dating, right? They're really good at making good conversation and connecting with people, but it's the long term that we really want. So every night, I'll give you an example. I see a lot of women who are, for instance, Sheila, a woman I saw this week, 47 years old. She's having some night sweats. You know, not enough perimenopausal symptoms to make her want to take hormones, but night sweats, so that she has the beginning of the repair conversation at night, falls asleep, has kind of a deep sleep cycle, then she wakes up at 1 o'clock and she kicks off all the covers because she's having night sweats. She can't keep her room at 64 degrees because her husband has low thyroid function and he's freezing. So he refuses to let the thermostat be at 64. So she has that beginning, maybe a little bit of the middle conversation, and then she wakes up, and then she has to pee, and then she goes back to sleep, and she goes back and she has that beginning conversation again, and then she has another night sweat at like 3 o'clock, kicks off the covers. She never gets to the end of the adrenal repair conversation. Let me give you another example. I had a woman who's 37 years old that I saw last week, and she has something called bruxism. I have this too, according to my dentist, where she grinds her teeth at night. This is a classic symptom of having cortisol that's out of control, like a runaway train. And so she'll have that beginning conversation, the repair conversation with her adrenals, where her brain is telling her adrenals that they can calm down. Try not to swear here, but calm down. Calm down. And then she starts to have bruxism where she grinds her teeth or she clenches her teeth, and she can't get to that middle conversation because her adrenals get caught in this loop, this endless loop, where they just think that, okay, she's grinding, she's clenching, she must be stressed out. Mm-hmm. There's a tiger chasing her. So it may be because of the coffee that she's drinking that she's got bruxism. We know caffeine tends to trigger that. Bruxism is really common. Your dentist can tell you if you do it. You may not even know. This always makes me think of Tina Fey with the mouth guard in that funny movie that she had with Steve Carell. Anyway, so that's the idea. That's really the headline with the adrenal repair conversation. I can tell you so much more. And what I hope that I can seduce Jackie, maybe that's not the right word, but I'm a gynecologist, maybe I can convince Jackie that we need to do some more courses on the adrenals. You know, it's not the sexiest topic to sell, I have to say.
Oh, I think it is. I do, because everyone hears adrenal, 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 and it's a little confusing, and it feels like there are very little action plans. It feels like, well, here's a supplement for adrenal support, and if you go to the store, you see about 100 supplements for adrenal support. You don't really know what to get or what to do. So that would be, I imagine people be very helped with that.
I think so too. You know, when I say that I think it's a hard sell, I mean that in the way that I think prevention is a hard sell, meaning that it's hard to get people to really buy in. I think when you say stress or you talk about the adrenals, people think, ugh, I know, I need to reduce stress. Don't tell me.
Yes.
Just tell me what to do. You know, they think it's that boring conversation, and I actually think there's so much really cool information, and it's not as simple as just going to Whole Foods and finding the answer in a pill bottle, a supplement bottle in this situation. You actually want to do the proven things that really move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
The other quick story I want to tell you is I have this really dear friend that I go running with every Sunday. Honestly, it's more therapy than it is running. I just love seeing her. We've been doing this for, I don't know, 5-7 years.
Oh, wow.
And she read my book, The Hormone Cure, and she said to me, okay, I love your book. I love your voice.
I love your book. I have to second that. I love your book, and I love your voice. I agree. So please
well,
continue.
Thank you, Jackie. I appreciate that, but I totally wasn't looking for compliments. But what she said to me, which is so funny, is she said, but, you know, I love your book, but will you shut up about the adrenals? Every time I hear the word adrenals, it just creeps me out. Like, I don't want to hear about the adrenals. Just give me the list of what to do. And I think a lot of women feel that way. It's just like, kidneys, adrenals. I don't even want to think about that.
Yeah, I don't even know where they are in my body. I mean, that's how foreign it might be for someone like you. I mean, I don't even know where the adrenals are in my body. I know where my heart is. I don't know where the adrenals are. But it's true. You do hear about it. And I think stress is really the watchword. Yesterday I read something that said that stress is equivalent to smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. And that really made me perk up, because you can say, oh, stress is bad, it'll cause a heart attack at some point, or, you know, all these things you can sort of write it off in your head about not focusing on the prevention part. But when I read, and I don't, of course, know if that was from a study or if that's just anecdotal or what that was, but when I read that stress was as if you were smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day, and I wouldn't even consider smoking a cigarette, that really made me wake up.
I totally agree with that, and I think it's fantastic. I love it when you do this, Jackie, because that's a paradigm shifter.
Yes.
You know, that trance that we get into where it's just like, yeah, fine, I know I need to manage stress better,
mm-hmm.
blah, blah, blah. Like, when you hear that, when you hear it phrased in that way, stress is equivalent to smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day, I totally agree with that statement. I totally agree. And it's a different way of looking at the problem, looking at the puzzle, that I think actually gets people into action. Like, oh, yeah, maybe this is shortening my telomeres and like cutting 10 years off my life. Maybe I need to look at this. So many people have already bought the message that they don't want to smoke, and yet they're burning the candle at both ends, and cortisol is ruining their lives. They don't even know it. Okay, I think we're getting distracted. Your kidneys and adrenals are in your mid-back. If you put your hands on your mid-back, like on the back of your ribs, they're right under there. But shall we move on to the next one?
Yeah, I just want to jump in and ask our operator to tell if people join us live, if you do want to ask a question, how you would go about doing that.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this moment, if you have a question, please hit *0 on your keypad. I'll collect your name and place you back onto the call. Once again, that's *0.
Okay, so we'll move on to the next question, and then we'll see if anyone has any live. Any specific supplement or product recommendations if you notice your hair is getting thinner as you get older?
Yeah, well, a couple things here, and then I hope, Jackie, maybe you could say a few things about some of the new work that we're doing that'll be on offer soon. Yes, you know, it's funny, all of these questions that we got today, the list is so long. I feel like we could do an entire course on each of these questions. So let me hit the headlines again. When you notice your hair is getting thinner, I would say don't take it sitting down. I want you to see this as a really important message from your body that something is amiss. Yes, some women will have age-related hair loss, especially if that was your mother's story, but as Jackie and I have been talking about, there are many reasons why you might be finding that your hair is thinning, and there are things that are actually completely correctable. So supplements, as with anything that I approach, hopefully you know this about me by now, I apply the Gottfried Protocol. The Gottfried Protocol is this 3-step progressive approach to getting to the root cause of your problem, in this case, thinning hair. The idea here with thinning hair is that you want to figure out the root cause. There's a long list of root causes. Jackie will tell you how you can learn more about that shortly. But just to give you at least a few answers to get you into action, The most common reason for hair loss, in fact, this is true for 90% of women with hair loss, is that you're low in iron or lysine or both. So that's a place where you could look to supplement, but honestly, I think it's better to figure out, is that a nutritional gap for you before you just start blindly taking a supplement? Another supplement that's been shown to be helpful is biotin. Biotin. It helps not just your hair, but also fingernails and skin. So, Jackie, did you have something you wanted to add here?
Exactly. And what's great is that Dr. Sarah has helped people in her practice over and over with this problem. The thing that struck me the most is that, Dr. Sarah, when you were saying that you've seen so many women who are just so dismissed.
Yes.
About the problem and just saying, well, you know, you're just getting older. And not only do you not dismiss it, there are so very concrete 8 different top reasons of why this is happening. And you also apply your protocol. And the best part about this program that we're working on, because this is the question I wanted to know, is it reversible? Is it reversible a little bit of the time? Is it reversible most of the time? And Dr. Sarah told me it's reversible most of the time. So the biggest thing here is that she really saw the frustration, because we had a lot of questions about this in the Hormone Reset Program, about thinning hair and your skin and how you can reverse this, because that's something you just can't hide. You can't, when you have extra fat, people, you wear a little bit of bigger shirt, you know, we all do it. We all have our, you know, skinny jeans and our other jeans. But when you're talking about your hair and your skin, it's something that is just, it's so frustrating and so upsetting when you feel like you go to the doctor and you can't get help. So we did create a program. We'll be letting everyone know, obviously. And I'm really, really excited about it, because we've been discussing so many of the ways of how you can improve it, but also what Dr. Sarah was just saying, it's really an indicator of what's going on underlying, right? It's really your health. And so I'm really excited about this next program. We'll certainly let everyone know.
I'm so excited, too. And I just wanted to completely underline what you just said, because this is one of many situations where women get the pat on the back. You know, I feel like they take this problem to their physician, they like worked up the courage to even broach the subject, and they get the pat on the back, you know, kind of like, they're there, you're just getting older, you need to accept the aging process. And I would say, BS, that's a myth. That's a myth. The truth is that you can reverse it. 50% of women have hair loss at 50. And it doesn't need to be the case. You can reverse it. You can manage it most of the time. You don't need to resort to Rogaine. You don't need to slime every hair follicle with some new chemical. You're selling yourself short if you're either accepting it or you're resorting to Rogaine. So hooray for that. Okay, should we go to the next question?
Yes, I just want to jump in really quick. Do we have any live questions?
At this moment, there are no live questions.
Okay, great. Next question. Did you want to read that right up your alley, right next door to you?
Sure. Dr. Sarah, I'm a 55-year-old doctoral dissertation student, mother of a 15-year-old boy, wife, daughter, friend, etc. My son attends a local school near your home. My area of professional interest is adolescent studies, and I would love to have an understanding of how to extend your work in balancing hormones to adolescents. Being in balance could mitigate much of the risk-taking and stimulation-seeking behavior during teenage years. Amen to that, sister.
Right.
Adolescent health is another crisis area in our country, in my opinion, and I would love to find an integrative medical approach for adolescents. So I feel like I want to get my pom-poms out after reading this, because I so agree with her. And honestly, after driving my 13-year-old to school this morning at 7 a.m. and like hearing the litany from her about how I was failing her in so many ways, I just I can't agree more, and I'm right there with you in terms of, you know, kind of being in it. So I completely agree. I don't have a quick answer for you, but I definitely believe that we have an epidemic of problems with cortisol among our children. And it's true in adolescence. It's true with younger kids. I think it is a key part of the childhood obesity epidemic. And if Michelle Obama is listening to this, Michelle, please call me because I would love to work on this with you. I love that she's taking on childhood obesity and really focusing on food policy. I think that's so important. But one of the things that happens, you know, if you just imagine for a moment how a kid experiences this, you know, if you imagine, say, a 13-year-old girl who wakes up in the morning and she just started getting her period, her estrogen is really kind of going strong and all she wants to do is be with her girlfriends and doesn't really want to hang out with her mother. Maybe her cortisol is high because she's got a lot of homework and she's feeling stressed about a test that day. That high cortisol is going to give her some sugar cravings, and so it's going to make her go to the kitchen and maybe want to eat Fruit Loops instead of a more nourishing breakfast. And then that's just setting off a whole cycle that is making her more inflamed. You eat refined carbohydrates, and that makes your cortisol go up even higher. So then maybe she picks a fight, or she's trying to find some relief from the high cortisol. She wants to soothe herself. And that's where I think a lot of kids get into some of the risk-taking. You know, maybe they have some impulse control issues and they find that being on Facebook a lot or being on, you know, that can be very addictive, or being on starting to experiment with drugs or with alcohol really helps them feel soothed, and then they can get into an addictive pattern with that. So I think that the answer actually comes back to the key tenets that we've been talking about in Hormone Reset, that you really want to work with your Charlie's Angels. That applies to both girls and boys, men and women. For men, you just want to substitute testosterone for estrogen. Men are actually a little bit simpler. Boys are a little simpler. Men also do better with stress. Stress favors them more than women. But I really think that all paths lead back to cortisol. Cortisol is really the most important hormone to get on your team again. So that would be my response to that question.
Next question. Once the hormones are balanced, what is the treatment protocol? Are the supplements and dosages changed, maintained, or discontinued?
Yeah, I love that our people, our tribe, Jackie, is really wanting to get specific about how you do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally hear that. I mean, this is what I do one-on-one with women. I'm actually on sabbatical now. I only have a mastermind that I'm running. But for people who are feeling better, you know, here's kind of a typical scenario. You have high cortisol. Maybe it's pulling your thyroid offline. It's making your thyroid underfunction. So you go to the root cause. You get your cortisol back into that Goldilocks position. And the bonus prize is that your thyroid starts working better and you lose 5 or 10 pounds because your thyroid is in charge of metabolism. Once that happens, many of the lifestyle tweaks, you know, say you're doing your Tiara time and you're really consistent about the dose, you're doing it 4 times a week for 15 to 30 minutes. I say hang on to the lifestyle changes, but drop off the supplements. And you can do that slowly and attune to what happens. So that's my short version. Honestly, in my book, I've got an entire chapter on hormonal nirvana. It's chapter 11, how to stay the course. You know, once you are feeling better, you don't want to start to backslide. So if you start to backslide, you got to revisit these things. And I think it's important that you do something that I call meeting your cure in the middle, meaning that your hormone cure is not some destination. It's actually a process. And it's a process of getting, you know, making those two steps forward, reassessing, starting to come off of one of your supplements, for instance, noticing if your symptoms start to flare or if you're actually continuing to feel good, and then making all those little micro adjustments so that you're able to sustain the benefits, sustain the mood that you've corrected. You know, maybe you fixed your PMS where you don't feel like you're running task to task like a chicken with your head cut off. So I hope that answers it. I mean, I have a really long response to you and a very long chapter here about really building, defining, and then defending your new habits. I think that's probably a key part of Peer Trainer. I think it's important to also have external accountability. I think that's really important for women. Do you have anything you want to add to that, Jackie? Because I imagine this comes up quite a bit in terms of sustaining the benefits with weight loss in Peer Trainer, for instance.
I think that, absolutely. I think that people actually have a completely different approach to maintaining successfully than they do when they're really charged up with all those wins every week. And I think also from what we've seen, when you get to a place of what I call equilibrium, when your body's really working, when you go off a little bit, you don't really notice it as much because you can bounce back so quickly. But what happens is those really start to build on each other. I think the biggest thing is, I would definitely recommend Dr. Sarah's book when it comes out, because you'll really get pretty in-depth with the maintaining and things like that. But the second thing is really start to approach this as kind of what Dr. Sarah just said, as a process. It is something where as you get to where you want to go, you don't have to focus on it as much. It's not your biggest, you know, thing, because you're not in pain as much anymore. And I'm only relating this to weight loss. It's not acute. It's not always on your mind. And so it gets a lot easier, and it gets easier to accept the fact that it is a process, because it's not as grueling and it's not as frustrating for you. But I think, you know, we have so many more questions. Again, I think we could go on about this for 2 hours too. The next question: regarding rhodiola, what is the dosage? In your interview with JJ, the dose mentioned was 200 milligrams twice a day, as opposed to the 100 milligrams twice daily outlined in the material for this course. Perhaps there's not a huge difference here.
Yeah, another great question. And Jackie, as you know, I'm very dear friends, as you are with JJ Virgin.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and
that's how we met each other, everyone listening. That's how we met Dr. Sarah. Very, very fortunate and grateful about that.
Yes, absolutely. So JJ has a different personality than me. She has a different temperament. And, you know, she's hardcore, right? She is pedal to the metal.
Yep.
And I think I can totally hear her. I've never heard this from her, but I can totally hear her saying, rhodiola, don't bother unless it's 200 milligrams twice a day. Like, I could really hear that. Mm-hmm. And that is one truth. My approach is that I'm a big fan, as a physician, in figuring out the dose response. So just as in conventional medicine, I don't think that one size fits all. I don't think that 20 milligrams of Prozac for depression is the right treatment for all people with depression. I think you got to tailor. That's the whole promise of personalized medicine, where you really consider some of these nuances and you figure out, okay, this woman weighs 125 pounds. She's better off taking rhodiola 100 milligrams twice a day than this guy who weighs 200 pounds and he's trying to lower his cortisol by taking 200 milligrams twice a day. So my answer is, there's a dose response. It's not one size fits all. You want to figure out what works for you. I would say start off at the lower end. See if it mitigates your symptoms. You know, do your crazy pants symptoms resolve? If they don't, then you try tweaking the dose. You figure out your dose response. So this is kind of a sophisticated way of looking at dosing. Not everybody likes it because they just want the answer. But honestly, you can do this. This is not hard. It's not rocket science. I know because I studied rockets in MIT. This is not rocket science. You can do this. You can totally figure out what the right dose is for your body, and it's going to serve you way better than some blanket statement about what the right dose is. The other thing about rhodiola that I just want to mention, because we often don't have time when we're doing these calls, rhodiola can be very stimulating for people. So let me give you a quick example. I haven't seen this in my own practice, and I prescribe rhodiola pretty much every day, but I run a mastermind for practitioners, for doctors and health coaches, life coaches who are trying to learn the hormone cure. And I had a psychiatrist, a functional medicine psychiatrist, she's more integrative like I am, respond to a conference that I did on stress and rhodiola. And she said, you know, you got to warn your people that if they have borderline bipolar, if they have manic depression, and maybe they don't even know they have manic depression, if they take rhodiola, it can sometimes overstimulate them and cause problems. You've got to warn everybody about that. And I said, totally hear you, totally agree. If I warned everybody about everything with every single supplement that I mention,
yeah,
we would never get to the heart of the matter. Like, we would never get to the meat. So
exactly.
You know, I want you to take that self-responsibility to understand that there are some risks. You know, just because you get it from a health food store doesn't mean that a supplement is totally benign and safe. So you want to be careful about that.
You have to find what works for you. Every single person is different. Something that works for me doesn't work for one of my best friends. And it's kind of like we don't all like the same foods. We're all different. So, you know, just to reiterate what you – just to underscore what you just said, I mean, it's we all kind of want a magic bullet, and I think we all do. But I think that it takes a little bit more effort to embrace the fact that we are the magic bullet. Like, we know best. We know what affects our body. And the more we pay attention and we get really in touch with what works for us, then we come up almost with the perfect prescription, you know, perfect individual prescription.
I agree. That's where you meet your cure in the middle. I totally agree with that. I love the way you stated that, Jackie. It's beautiful.
Well, thanks. we're just always talking about try to find what works for you. And I know that you are really able to help people with the information because you've helped me. You've helped so many people at Peer Trainer already really say, wow, you know, you've almost also given people permission to trust their own gut, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Where they say, I knew something was wrong. I kept hearing everything was fine, but I knew something was wrong. And I think that that's what we all need, is we need someone who says, yeah, you know what? Sure, maybe you weren't trained at Harvard. Maybe you weren't trained anywhere. Maybe you learned at a very young age to stop trusting your own gut, but it's time to trust it again. And I think that people really feel that. And that's what I love so much about the information that you're giving.
I one other quick thing? I just can't.
Yeah, please.
I can't help myself. So, with this magic bullet thing, you know, I agree on the one hand that there is no magic bullet, but on the other hand, I really want people to realize that you can get pretty close to a magic bullet by focusing on cortisol. Cortisol is the small hinge that moves the big doors. I mean, it is the hormone that is probably causing problems with the other hormonal systems in your body. We focused on how it can affect your estrogen and progesterone in hormone reset and also your thyroid. But, oh, by the way, it also affects those grow and repair hormones like testosterone and DHEA. We didn't even get into that in hormone reset. So when you focus on cortisol, when you get cortisol back on your team again. That's as close to a magic bullet as you can get. It really moves the needle. So I just wanted to emphasize that one point. I feel like I don't shut up about cortisol.
But it really got through to me, because cortisol for me in my head now, all it equals is stress. And of course, you know, there you want a little bit higher cortisol, as you said, in the morning. But it really equals stress, and it really makes you think, okay, I am stressed. This is hurting every bit of my body. This is just like we said before, you know, it isn't just something nice to like focus on when you have a minute. And you really, when you say all roads lead back to cortisol, it makes it palpable. It makes you feel like, okay, I can just start off with this one thing. I'm going to really work on my cortisol. And so that's why I always appreciate you always saying that, because it really, like why we called it reset, it resets things in my mind of where to focus.
That's right. It's like giving up your 2-pack per day smoking habit. I love that example.
Exactly. So we answer the next question, the best way to get vitamin D, in the last one. The next one is, I am 60 and feel like I might have low estrogen, but I also felt like my cortisol was too high, so I bought the Reset Cortisol Kit. I've been taking it for 5 days. Should I wait until I finish the cortisol kit before I order the estrogen kit?
Yeah, love this question. And as you can imagine, these hormones we're talking about, they don't exist in a vacuum, right? It's not like most of us have a problem with just one hormone. Not only do most of us have a problem with more than one hormone, they also affect each other because they're interdependent. I think I even said before that I think of them as being codependent. So we want to try to unravel what's the primary issue here. Now, I usually figure that cortisol is the primary issue. So I'm glad that this woman started with the cortisol reset kit. I think that's fantastic. But as much as I love to put these things into clear, distinct categories, you know, you should see my spice drawer, the truth is that there's these interrelated overlapping systems with these hormones and how they affect your happy brain chemicals, etc. So for this woman, you know, the short version is I would go ahead and start with the estrogen kit. It sounds like at age 60, you're probably going to need both. But you've already made a lot of progress by focusing on the cortisol. Now, I would say there's kind of two different camps here along a spectrum. There's the camp of the purists, and the purists, P-U-R-I-S-T, the purists would say, okay, let's just fix the cortisol. Let's spend a month fixing cortisol and then see where we are. You know, you could do another quiz and see where you are after being on the Reset Cortisol Kit. Then there's the other camp, and I find that most of the women I work with are in the other camp. They are the just give it to me fast, let's move the needle as rapidly as possible. I've got things to do. I don't want to be sidelined with these symptoms any longer than I need to. And those people like to start multiple things at once. They like to deal with the multiple hormone imbalances. One is not necessarily better than the other. I think for busy women, they want the twofer. They want, you know, to do two at once. So I think to respond to this woman, go ahead and start the estrogen kit. I think it's a good idea. You could certainly wait and just see where you are after doing the Reset Cortisol Kit, but it sounds to me at age 60 that you probably need both. That's what I would suggest to someone in my practice.
And I'm going to skip to, because I know we only have 10 minutes left. There's one question that's been on the agenda for a long time. I'm going to skip to a different question, number 15. I'm curious, and then we can go back. I'm curious about using, is it maca? It's maca, right?
Maca
root in my breakfast shake. So I am I am definitely estrogen dominant. In the thyroid class, Dr. Sarah mentioned to use caution with maca, not to use so much your breasts enlarge. I use 1 level teaspoon at breakfast, sometimes another at lunch. I haven't seen any changes in my breast size other than that they grow or shrink depending on my weight gain or loss. I've always carried the majority of weight on my hips and butt and still do to this day. I'm concerned because I had a benign breast tumor removed 11 years ago at age 32, and this is something I have to watch as I enter my mid-40s. I found that after using 1 teaspoon of maca root powder in my pea rice protein shakes, I always have one for breakfast, occasionally for lunch, for about 6 weeks, my vaginal lubrication was out of control. I immediately dropped to 1/2 teaspoon only at breakfast, and this works much better for me. I've never had an issue or problem with lubrication, and 6 weeks of just 1 teaspoon root, 1 teaspoon of maca every morning made me overflow. Thanks for all you do. I enjoyed the course. I look very forward to getting my levels tested in the next month so that I have a baseline.
Okay. Well, let me pull out a couple of things here. I think the question, maybe you can help me understand what the actual question is, Jackie, because there's a lot of lovely, super feminine detail here. And I have to tell you, I love that stuff. But I think the question is, what's going on with the maca? How's it affecting my estrogen? Are my boobs safe? Is that
yeah,
what
and
you...
is it okay? Yeah, and is it okay? Is the 1 teaspoon she's doing in breakfast, sometimes lunch, you know, so that's 2 a day, is that okay?
Yes. So it's a little challenging for me to say across the board that this dose is right for you. Again, it gets back to that question that we had about dose response and figuring out the right dose for you. So I don't even know with your teaspoon how many milligrams that is of maca or how many grams it is. So let me give you a couple of suggestions about how to approach this. And also, when this lovely woman was talking about lubrication, I think she means that she had dryness when she was at 1 teaspoon of the maca root, and it seemed to get better when she went down to 1/2 teaspoon. But even that, I'm not sure that I've got it totally right. Do you have
sure
a read
either.
On that?
It sounded like it was out of control. It was overflowing.
Like she was super juicy? Okay,
yes,
well.
Super, exactly.
Okay, so that's actually unusual, but I can see that. So let's back up for a minute and just talk about maca for a moment. Is this woman, is she 41 years young? It's hard for me to tell from
yeah,
that.
And this is something I have to watch as I enter my mid-40s. So my guess is 42.
Okay. So with maca, what we know about maca, I often will recommend maca for women in perimenopause, especially the second phase of perimenopause. Remember, the first phase of perimenopause is when your progesterone drops. So you want to make sure that you get enough progesterone, otherwise you're going to be in estrogen dominance. And then the second phase of perimenopause is when your estrogen drops. So what maca does, it's been shown to increase your estrogen levels, mostly in women in menopause. The cool thing about that is that maca helps with sleep issues that are in perimenopause and menopause. It helps with depression. It's been proven to help with memory, energy, reduces hot flashes. It also helps with vaginal dryness. There's even some studies that show that maca helps with body mass index. It helps you lose weight, and it also increases bone density. So these are all estrogen benefits. We know that raising estrogen sometimes can help you with appetite if you have a problem. The idea, again, here, like with cortisol, is you want your estrogen to be in that Goldilocks position, not too high, not too low. So maca also has been shown to improve libido. It lowers anxiety. These are symptoms of low estrogen. And some people even use maca to help with the sexual side effects of being on an antidepressant. You'd want to talk to your local physician about that. So when it comes to maca, the usual dose is somewhere around 2,000 milligrams a day. I think that's what JJ would say. And I feel like this woman is actually figuring out the right dose for her. It sounds to me like she figured out that 1/2 teaspoon at breakfast was the right dose. So
yes.
I love how she described figuring out her dose response. You know, it's not complicated. It's not hard. She figured it out. When it comes to the breast, let me address that for a moment. We know that estrogen dominance is not good for your girls. It's not good for breast health. That's one of the reasons why I encourage women to be really careful about how much alcohol they have. We know that 3 to 6 servings a week is associated with a greater risk of breast cancer because it raises your bad estrogens, makes your estrogens do this backflip and cause problems, a bad neighborhood in your breasts. And similarly, if you already have estrogen dominance, if your estrogen is already high and you're adding on more maca, that may not be the best thing for you. You know, I would want to know, how's the balance between estrogen and progesterone? Someone in my practice, I would say, let's do a saliva test. Let's measure on day 21 of your cycle the level of progesterone in your saliva divided by the level of estradiol, that main estrogen that you make when you're in your reproductive years. You want that ratio to be around 250 to 300. And if it's not, if it's 30, then you need more progesterone and you may need to drop your estrogen level. So it sounds like this woman has estrogen dominance. She's already had some problems with her breasts, and so she's someone who definitely needs regular breast screening and to be aware of some of the things you can do to really help your breast health and prevent that bad neighborhood in your breasts. There's another program we should do, Jackie.
I know.
A little note to self.
I know, absolutely. I think this is the thing that we have in the back of our mind when we don't have enough knowledge, and it just serves as fear, and it would just be great to get some of those fears cleared up.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, for this woman in particular, I love how she is describing how attuned she is to her estrogen symptoms. So she has the good fortune of knowing that her vaginal lubrication really tracks with her estrogen levels. So in her situation, to really figure out the right dose of maca, I would encourage her to do some testing and just see where she is, as well as regular breast screening. There's actually some new data. You might have heard in 2009 there was this recommendation that we don't do routine mammograms anymore for women until age 50. And a lot of women were freaking out about that after being told they needed mammograms every year starting between 35 and 40. And now there's actually some brand new data that just came out showing that it does benefit you to have digital mammograms in your 40s. So I just would want to make sure that this woman is being mindful of that and she's tracking her estrogen levels so that she's taking care of the girls. We've got your back and we've got your rack here at Peer Trainer.
Yeah. I love it.
I heard that on Dr. Bethany Frankel. I don't want to take claim for that.
Oh, I love that. That's great. I think we might have time for one more question. I know we still have a couple in here. I think we should go to the last one because she definitely sounds frustrating. My question, for several years now, I've had awful pain during intercourse to the point now that I've completely shut down sexually. I've lost all interest and I feel numb to pleasure. I'm only 54. I feel very sad for my poor husband of 19 years who is waiting patiently on the sidelines. I heard you mention recently about how birth control pills can lead to this. I was on birth control orally for many years in my 40s to help with my fibroids. I started on bioidentical hormones 6 months ago after blood work revealed several severe imbalances, and I'm working to get my cortisol down with rhodiola. I also just got an M-Wave last week at your suggestion. I'm so frustrated. Do you have any helpful suggestions on how I can regain my sexual juiciness and feel pleasure again? Thank you.
Oh, honey, definitely. I definitely have some suggestions for you. And I appreciate that she highlighted one of the problems with birth control pills. You know, I honestly believe that we've been duped with birth control pills. I don't know any women who haven't been on birth control pills at some point in their lives. I certainly was when I think I was 19 or 20 when I first went on birth control pills. And it turns out that they are the cause of the number one hormone imbalance in this country. They basically lower your testosterone so much that in about 20% of women, they cause vaginal dryness. And here's the part that I think is so shocking. When you stop birth control pills, you think that you would go back to normal. But no, no, no. Unfortunately, you don't. Because what happens when you go on birth control pills, are you ready for a science moment, Jackie?
I am. This is fascinating. I'm riveted.
She's bracing herself. Okay, so when you go on birth control pills, here's what happens. The oral estrogen makes a super cute little protein in your blood called sex hormone binding globulin. I know that's a really long name and mouthful. We'll just call it SHBG. SHBG. So SHBG goes up when you go on a birth control pill. The SHBG is like a sponge, and it soaks up all of your lovely testosterone. You know, a lot of women don't realize this. Because we have so much less testosterone than men, a lot of women have the mistaken idea that testosterone doesn't matter or it's less important for women. It turns out that testosterone is like 10 times more concentrated than even your estrogen levels. So this is a big deal. You drop your testosterone significantly. And then if we go to your lady garden, your genitalia. Can we have a genitalia moment here? So if you go to your genitalia, when you drop that testosterone level, many of the receptors, which are kind of like the lock on the door of a cell, the receptors that are right at the opening of the vagina basically go on strike. So you drop your testosterone level, the cells right at your vagina, and 20% of women go on strike. They basically close shop and say, goodbye, we're on vacation, we're going into retirement. It's reversible, but here's the shocking part. When you then, a year after stopping birth control pills, if you go back and you measure that SHBG, the sex hormone binding globulin, it's still elevated. It's not as high as
a year later.
So it's not as high as it was when you were on the birth control pill, but it's still a problem. So a lot of women then, you know, a couple of years later, maybe in the case of this woman, I don't know if it was immediate with the birth control pill or if it came in a little later, she says that she's, did she say she's 50-something?
54. 54.
Yeah, so she's very young, 54 years young. So I don't know when this showed up. You know, for some women, they make it through being on the birth control pills, don't have a problem, but then when they're 47, 48, 49, 50, when estrogen starts to drop in that second half of perimenopause, then they notice this intense dryness. So, okay, enough about the misery of it. I could go a little further with a funny little story about the receptors, but let me hold on to that thought. So
okay.
What do you do about it? Let me just get to what do you do about it. So it turns out that you want to see a clinician who knows about these things, a physician ideally or nurse practitioner who can prescribe something for you. And there's a little cocktail that you can make that you would apply to the vulva and vagina. And it's a combination of estrogen and testosterone so that you're putting a concentrated dose on those poor little cells that have gone on strike and you're getting them to, you know, come to mama, come back and let's have you do your job again. So that's the solution. You want to use local treatment. You can't take a pill or use a cream on your arms, which is how a lot of bioidentical hormones are given, or with pellets. You can't get the treatment that you need to that specific area unless you're applying a cream directly to the skin that's affected.
What kind of nurse practitioners or physicians know about this kind of protocol?
You know, unfortunately, there aren't many. We know that about 80% of women who have vaginal dryness are not getting treated, which makes me crazy. I'm like a crusader to be talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
So there aren't many physicians who do this. It's funny, I just did a webinar with Dr. Andrew Goldstein, who is an expert at this. And Jackie, we're going to totally do this on the fly. I could send some information to you if that's, we could maybe talk offline about this, but if you wanted your people to have access to that, I'd be happy to share it. It's free.
Especially when you just said 80% of people are 80% of people are not treated with the correct protocol. And I mean, that's egregious. I mean, yes, I would, that would be great. And we will help this person, this woman who wrote in, and other people who I'm sure have this problem. I mean, it's one of the biggest searches on the internet, vaginal dryness.
That's right. And maybe let me just say one other quick thing about why this affects some women more than others, because there's an interesting little genetic story here.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully I can make it compelling so that it doesn't feel like I'm getting too sciencey on you. So Dr. Goldstein, who is in Annapolis, Maryland, you can go see him, or you can listen to this webinar that I'll send to Jackie and see if your local physician can help you with this. He talks about how women have one of two different types of receptors for testosterone. They either have the Prius receptor, the super efficient receptor, or they have the Hummer receptor. And
yeah.
I love this analogy. So what happens is that about 20% of women have this Hummer receptor. And it means that those receptors need a lot of gas. They need a lot of testosterone to be working properly. And if you take a woman who's got mostly those Hummer receptors and you put her on the birth control pill, and she starts to run low on gas because her testosterone's dropped, the sex hormone binding globulin's like a sponge soaking it up, she is then going to have problems with pain. She's going to have vaginal dryness or irritation, or, you know, she just feels like she wants her husband to go away. Now, on the other end of the spectrum is women who have mostly the Prius receptors. And this is totally Dr. Goldstein's work. Don't attribute this to me.
Mm-hmm.
So the Prius receptors are actually really efficient. They can go far with very little gas.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you put them on the birth control pills, they're actually fine. They don't have vaginal dryness. So I probably have Prius receptors. I never had a problem with this when I was on birth control pills. But sometimes that woman, when then she's 49 or 50 and her estrogen starts to drop, she may have vaginal dryness then. It's not like she's always going to be free of this problem. So I just wanted to explain, you know, genetically, some of us are more likely to be the Hummer type than the Prius type.
And
isn't that a good analogy?
it's excellent, because you know exactly, oh, I need more gas, or I'm pretty gas efficient. I have two quick follow-up questions before we wrap up. And if we did have two or three other questions we didn't get to, and we'll answer them. I promise we will get those answered in a timely manner. But I wanted to ask you two quick things. Number one, if you don't have vaginal dryness, but, you know, people talk about intercourse just hurting, is that, can all of those be symptomatic of maybe you took birth control and maybe you're low in testosterone and you're more of a Hummer versus a Prius?
Yeah, good question. So there's usually three different main reasons, like top three reasons for pain with sex. In fact, this interview that I did with Andrew Goldstein addresses all three of these, so I think this would be really good content for women who are in the hormone reset. Maybe we can bonus that in. So the first reason is this whole thing with the birth control pills and problems with testosterone. It can also happen if you're on oral estrogen. So
mm-hmm.
some women, I don't know why, I never prescribe it this way, but their doctor thinks it's a good idea to start them on oral estrogen when they're in their 40s, 50s, or 60s, so you don't want that. Second reason is some women have high vaginal tone. Like the medical name for it is hypertonicity, and basically they have kind of spasm of the muscles either in the vagina or in the pelvis. Like there's a lot of muscles there, muscles you may not have even met before. And they can go into spasm without you even knowing it or being able to control it. The third issue is some women from birth just have the kind of cells and receptors that are exquisitely sensitive. They are like the highly sensitive people. They have the highly sensitive lady garden, and they just have a lot of triggering and discomfort and inflammation when they try to have sex. And a lot of these women have been suffering for a very long time, often in silence and with shame. And so that's what I really want to correct and turn around. The cool thing is there are a number of things that you can do for this. This is where Andrew Goldstein is an expert. In fact, I think he's the best expert in the world. He's a really good guy. He's a total mensch. And there's both topical treatments that can help with this, and there's also a really minor surgery that can cure it, like with 90%+ success. So that's the quick answer to that. Not so quick. That's the long answer to that, Jackie.
And I have one tiny follow-up question because I know I'm thinking about this, so I can't imagine everybody's not thinking about this. So you said a year after birth control, the SBH blah, blah, blah is still elevated after you stop taking it. Is there ever a time, 5 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later, that it goes back to the normal levels and is no longer sponging up your testosterone?
Yeah, great question. So with the sex hormone binding globulin, SHBG, I think we should think of a pet name, the she-bug or something like that.
Yeah, so, she-bug. I love it.
So the short answer is we don't know, Jackie, because this study that was done pretty recently that showed that the sex hormone binding globulin, your she-bug, is still high 1 year out after stopping the birth control pill, is the first that we ever heard of this. Like, no one has looked at it before. And to my knowledge, we don't have studies that have looked further out beyond 1 year. So I hope that we will get that information. Here's the part that's kind of discouraging. As you might imagine, I started off talking about this by saying, I don't know anyone who hasn't been on birth control pills. You know, I think it's like 1% of the female population has not been on birth control pills. And so that means this is a huge business for some pharmaceutical companies. There's a lot of birth control pills, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's like a $1 billion business or something. And and so that means that this kind of research is hard to fund. It's not going to be, you know, it's an expensive test to do. And we may or may not get the answer to that. I hope we do, but there's a lot kind of working against us on this.
Yeah, and I guess you have to look at it just as quitting smoking. You know, but you do repair, and, you know, who knows exactly what happens 20 years later, but... Well, thank you very much, Dr. Sarah. I've learned such a great deal, and I have to just chime in for just a second because I've been following your protocol for the last few months. It is much easier to focus when you go into the science discussions. So I'm curious if other people, I don't feel myself check, I just felt myself check out once, but only once. And I think when we first started talking, and I'm sure other people feel this, I mean, I was checking out every 3 minutes. I felt you sort of pulling me back into the discussion. So I really am curious if you're listening to this, if that happened with you too. Did you feel your focus, you know, after you've been working on this? Have you felt your focus during this Q&A change? And I'd love to know in the team if you want to email us. But Dr. Sarah, thank you again because I have learned such a, I always learn, but I learned a great deal today as well. And for everyone, I know we've mentioned many other things. We've mentioned the hair and skin. We also just mentioned a couple other things, the adrenals, the breast health that I know we, I mentioned. I mean, how do we all not have fear? Almost all of us know someone who has had breast issues, cancers, you know, and it goes on and on. So I know that that would be extremely valuable if we can rope Sarah into doing that as well. I know you have so much going on, and her book, when it comes out, I couldn't recommend it more. So, Dr. Sarah, thanks. We will see you next time. And as always, we appreciate it so much.
My pleasure, Jackie. I have to tell you, every time I'm on the line with your community, every time I hear your questions here in this Hormone Reset program, I just get filled with bliss. It's just so great to see how you're working with the material, how you're really trying to figure out how this applies to you, how you're trying to figure out, okay, how do I really rock this mission? How do I get these hormonal Charlie's Angels working for me the way that Dr. Sarah says I should? I really appreciate your hard work. And Jackie, I want to just keep doing some awesome work with you. It just raises my oxytocin every time I'm on the line with you.
Me too. And I imagine if other people, the one thing we get in the feedback all the time is how much people enjoy listening to your answers on the Q&A. So it's just been, I cannot tell you how much people appreciate it. And I know you hear it, but you know, it's always, it just had to reiterate again, people just love listening to the answers. So it's, again, thank you. We will see you next time, and I hope you have a great, great day.
Thank you. Thanks, okay. Everyone. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.